Continuing in mitzvah, Reish Samech Gimel 263, that a Kohen should not become Tamei due to a contact with a dead body. Again, this refers only to regular Kohanim. The halachos of the Kohen Godol, which don't apply currently, will be discussed in later mitzvos. We're at Midine HaMitzvah, the halachos of the mitzvah. Masha Amru Zichronim Levracha, the sages tell us, Shameis Metamei, in three ways. That the dead body conveys Tumah in these ways. B'maga, uve masa, uve ohel. Through touching, through carrying, and through tenting. So what's tenting? We'll see that in a few minutes. V'tumas masa limdua zirchana l'racha mikal v'chomer mitumas nevela. It never says anywhere in the Torah explicitly that someone who carries a dead body should be subject to the tumah of the dead body. But sages said that, well, tumas masa is even with regards to a nevela, to a dead animal. So if it applies to a dead animal, which is not metame ba'ohel, so certainly it applies to a dead human body, which is metame even ba'ohel. That it's much more stringent, so it can't be that the Torah left out masa by a dead body, and it included masa by a nevela, just didn't mention it explicitly for whatever reason. We have to get extra schar for darshening it out. It was better when we use our human powers to figure out what the Torah means, as opposed to when it's stated explicitly sometimes. We got to get the schar for doing that and listening to the chachamim. In any event, the dead body is metame b'masa as well. That's why a Kohen cannot be a pallbearer, even if somehow he doesn't come under the actual roof where the dead body is being kept, because he's not allowed to carry the body, even if he's not in contact with it or under it in any way. V'tumas maga ha'amura b'chol makom, bein b'meis bein b'shar ha'mitamin, in yanahu sheyiga ha'adam b'tuma atzma, that means the tumas maga, the tuma of touching, means that you touch it directly, bein b'yado bein b'raglo b'shar gufo. You have to touch it, whether you touch it with your hand or your foot. You might think that tumas maga just means, you know, you stick your finger on it. It doesn't mean that. It means any way you touch it with your body, you contract the tumah, whether it's with your hand or your foot or the rest of your body. Afilu bilishono negiahi. If you touch it with your tongue, that's still considered tumas maga. Doesn't apply to just a dead body. It applies to any type of tumah. It applies to tumas nevela also. If you touch it with your tongue, which might be something you'd be more inclined to touch with your tongue, a delicious nevela happens. The animal happened to be a nevela. It's still delicious. So you might be more inclined to touch that with your tongue, but whatever it is, so that still counts as tumas maga. However, it's interesting that what does not count as tumas maga is beis hastarim. If you touch it with a part of your body that's completely absorbed within your body, then it doesn't count. So for example, if somehow you manage to, let's say there's the example that is given, is that there's a ring that's tamei, and you manage to swallow it without actually hitting your tongue, you manage to just stick it in the back of your throat and swallow it without touching it with any visible part of your body, then that does not count as tumas maga. Does not count as maga. You would not become tamei from touching this ring. The same thing applies to when it's balua. So when the ring has been swallowed, so let's say you have a you swallow a tohor ring and a tummy ring, and they're both in your stomach at the same time, so they certainly touched each other. But nevertheless, once they come out, so the tummy ring, I mean, the ring that used to be tahor still remains tahor, even though it certainly touched the other one, because it's not considered a maga unless it's a part of the body that occurs in a space, shall we say, that's actually visible and can be recognized as such as touching. So again, not usually relevant, but you should know that such a halacha does apply. The Rambam zichrono livracha kasav shafilu negia betziporin over shinayim negia hi keguf. You might think that if you touch it with your nail or your teeth, that's not a real part of your body, that's like an extended part of your body. The same thing if you touch it with your hair. So if hair is not, maybe not a real part of the body, but nevertheless, since they are connected to the body, they're considered a tumas maga if you would touch it in such a manner.
The same thing applying to any article of clothing that came in contact with...
Well, article of clothing, it would be maga because of the clothing, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is any kind of tumor, anything which you're separate from.
Right. So if there was some situation where you need to touch it directly and you touched it with your clothing, then that wouldn't count as maga personally. But you're right. If you touch a dead body with your clothing, then your clothing is going to become an avatuma, and then you're going to
if you were wearing a talus and the talus happened to come in contact with the corpse.
That wouldn't be direct tumas maga, but you would become tum anyway because of the fact that your talus would now become become an afatuma because of the contact with the dead body. Yeah. V'tumas masa hamura b'chol makom. What does it mean, the tumah of carrying? Hu sheyisa adam hatumah afal pi shelo nagabah. Even if he didn't touch it at all. Afilu hayabena levena kama kelim. Hoel unasa'a nitma. It reminds you of the princess and the pea, but in the opposite direction. Even though she was on top of all these mattresses, she can still feel the pea. So the same thing too. If you have tons of, if you're carrying a huge, gigantic pile of things, and there's a dead body on top of the thing, so that that counts as tumas masa. Any way that this thing is moved or lifted because of your strength and power, so that's called tumas masa, and that would make you defile you from the dead body. Yeah.
Is there any kind of material which would insulate you from tumas? I mean, obviously, clothing does not.
Not the material per se. What might insulate you from tumas is being completely hermetically sealed. That's why you have those that funky picture of the Kohen on the airplane tying himself in a plastic bag. So her being hermetically sealed is what's called samid pasil. Mm-hmm. That's the Torah says that any kli that is completely hermetically sealed is not subject to the tumah from the stuff inside of it.
So I thought lead worked. Isn't that what
That's radioactivity.
No. There's something that the planes that carry bodies put. Or something. They put between the...
It's not the type of material, it's just the way it's constructed. Uh-huh. It has to be... I was reading a little bit more about this, actually, about the corpses on the airplane, so that... Moshe Feinstein said no, that Cohen is never allowed to get travel on an airplane with a dead body. This wasn't even discussed, these were flying over the cemetery, which is another level of chumrah that a lot of us can make on. I think there was an issue recently, they changed the flight path of the El Al planes because they were flying actually over the Chulon Cemetery in order to get to the Ben Gurion Airport. Anyway, but there are poskim who are even makel that the Kohen is allowed to fly on the airplane, because especially El Al airplanes, because they've actually made certain arrangements where I think the container in which the corpse is carried, and as well as the baggage hold itself, is... constructed, they did some sort of modification where it's constructed in such a way that it's considered to be a separate structure and completely sealed off from the plane. So again, it depends on the sealing off, it doesn't depend on the material per se, but the plastic bag is not makabel tumah, so if it's completely hermetically sealed surrounding this person, again, all the halachos are very complicated. I can't say I'm an expert in all those issues, but apparently this passenger on an airplane who was worried about the issue of flying over a cemetery, apparently even an airplane, so he sealed himself in a plastic bag.
So that possibly worked.
No.
Possibly. I can't tell you. I never seen it seriously addressed. All I've seen it is in news sites saying this crazy Orthodox Jew, he'll seal himself in a plastic bag. But it doesn't apply to metal kelim. I'm sorry. The kli itself is makabel tumah, so it would not apply. And even in, for example, if you have a house with a dead body in it, so if there is a kli cheres, a earthenware kli that's hermetically sealed, so that saves the stuff inside of it too from contracting the tumah from the tumah soil of the dead body, because kli cheres, earthenware vessels, are not mekabel tumah mi gabov, it's mekabel tumah mi tocho. In other words, you have to access the kli from the inside in order to transfer tumah to the kli cheres. So, for example, a metal kli is mekabel tumah when it's touched with something that's tummy, but a kli cheres is only mekabel tumah if you stick something inside of it that's tummy. So if you take a sheretz and you drop it into the airspace of a kli cheres, so that purifies the kli cheres, even if it didn't touch the walls of kli cheres at all, which would not be the case with a metal kli. So if you have a kli cheres, that saves. So the same thing, I guess, here, is plastic is not mekabel tumah, so then it would save, if it's hermetically sealed, it would save the kohen from becoming tummy.
How does the guy breathe?
For the few moments, he's flying over the cemetery, so he doesn't breathe.
That is that. Is there also actually a question kind of materials of whether aluminum is considered to be a metal, airplanes are they have aluminum alloy largely. So
right.
Now aluminum is not one of the was it six seven one of the metals.
Achaz hazahav es hakesef ahavadil vehoferes. Yeah, that talks about the kli midyan. When the Jewish people went to war against Midian, so it says that all the metal kalim you have to purify with the para aduma, and you have to immerse them in the mikvah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So aluminum...
So aluminum is not one of those five metals, yeah.
Because it wasn't...
It didn't exist.
It wasn't used at the time. So that's why also, because that verse is where the requirement of Tvilas Kalim is derived, the regular Tvilas Kalim that we do all the time when we buy vessels from a non-Jew, so we immerse them in the mikvah. That's why there's a whole shaila as to whether you have to immerse vessels that are made of aluminum. So most people are basically machmer on this, because the Gemara includes, says midrabanan, it's a shaila whether the whole institution of Tvilas Kalim is a deraisa rabanan, but even assuming it's deraisa, so then the chachamim added, as part of the requirement of Tvilas Kalim, glass, because people could get confused between glass and metal, because glass you could also put, melt down and make into, reform if it gets broken. So metal Kalim, that's one of the main characteristics, that you can melt them down and reform them if they get broken. So they include a glass, so you shouldn't get confused and not tovel something that you really have to tovel either on a Darais level or on a more stringent Darabana level. So the whole shaila is, so what about aluminum? So on the one hand, it's not one of the metals mentioned in the Torah, but it is a metal, so maybe the Torah didn't mean this specific phylus. It just means these are the examples of metal kalim. So anything that's metal, you would have to do tefilas kalim too, and even if they didn't, so then you can certainly melt down aluminum vessels and reform them. Mm-hmm. So maybe it should be included because of the glass. But we normally don't like saying that, because we say that when Chazal made Gzeira, they included what they included. So even if the reasonings happens to apply to something else, no, we only go with what they said. That's the whole issue by plastic kalim. That some poskim were machmir that you have to tovel plastic, because plastic you can, same way as metal, you can melt down and you can reform it. So maybe you should have to tovel glass too, because if the chachamim would be around today, the same reason applies to plastic, so they probably would have made the gzera by plastic too. So since they explicitly stated the reasons, you have to be machmir regarding plastic as well. Most poskim reject that. Most poskim say that, no, you don't have to tovel plastic, because when it comes, glass is certainly, it's certainly not deraisa, even if tefilas kalim is deraisa, so to tovel plastic, because it's not included in that list of metals. Plastic is not a metal. So we only have, since the chachamim declared that you have to tovel glass, so that's it. They clearly have to tovel glass. You don't have to tovel. You don't have to tovel plastic. That's the opinion of most poskim. Apparently, the rabbinate of Kahala Das Yeshurun follows the minority opinion. They say that you have to tovel plastic as well, because you can melt it down. That's why it says on the sign in the Kalim Mikvah that plastic should be tovel without a bracha. But most, the vast majority, even in the yeshivish world,
but
don't tovel plastic.
They're giving a nod to the opinion that it's not necessary when they say do it without a bracha.
Correct. Nobody says you make it, you do it with a bracha.
Yeah. Well, so wait, should you do aluminum with a bracha?
Oh.
So by that logic, you know, aluminum definitely should be.
Well, by aluminum, you have two reasons to be machmer. Maybe it really means all metals, not the specific list of five. And even if it doesn't mean metal, so you can, it's similar enough that we could be more sure than plastic that the chachamim would have been gozer on it nowadays, because you can melt it down and reform it. So again, there are poskim who say you tovel aluminum without a bracha. That is true, but I believe the normal practice is with the bracha. But this whole background is what I'm saying is an additional reason for leniency regarding disposable aluminum pans. Mm-hmm. There's a whole machlokes about disposable aluminum pans, if you have to tovel them or not. There are some people who say you always have to tovel them. There's some people who say you never have to tovel them. There's some people who say, well, if you're only planning to use it once and throw it away, or one or two times, some say, then you have to, a couple times, whatever, and then throw it away, then you don't have to tovel them. But if you plan on washing it and keep reusing it many times, and you know, until it gives krechts and falls apart, so then you do have to tovel them. So Rabbi Forst, in his book, the one, what's it called? The Guide to the Jewish Kitchen or something like that. Not the Kashrus one, that's more Lumdish, but this one's more conclusive and Balabat, which is designed for more general use. So he says that based on these this reasoning, that A, aluminum is not included in the list of metals, and B, because if a disposable kli might not necessarily be considered a real kli that you have to tovel, so he thinks that the ikar is you don't have to dispose to tovel disposable aluminum vessels at all.
Well, if you hold that you absolutely do have to tovel even temporary aluminum, how do you open a can of soda? How do you drink out of a can of soda then?
So by a can of soda, there's an additional reason for leniency, which is that you're not even intent. When you buy the can of soda, you just want the soda. You don't really want the can at all. An additional reason, the can is sort of secondary to the soda, so it's not really considered a kli that you bought from a non-Jew. Another reason for leniency is that since the can only turns into a usable vessel when the Jew opens it. You're metakin it to drink from, and therefore it's like the Jew is making the vessel, so it's not considered like you bought a Jew. But if you hold like that, that's the reason you don't tovel them, then you're certainly not allowed to open it on Shabbos. Just keep that in mind, yeah?
What? You're not supposed to open a can of soda on Shabbos?
That is whole crap.
I mean, many poskim hold you're not allowed to hold it, but I'm saying if somebody is lenient for that reason, about by not toveling a can of soda, because you're making the kli, then you're certainly not allowed to do it on Shabbos.
So then you also make a tuna can even more would be true with a tuna can if you're the one who opens it, right?
Well, a tuna can is more lenient also. Wait, certainly, yes. A tuna can is even better because it's totally hermetically sealed. Some now have a tab also on the tuna can. But a tuna can is even more reason for leniency in normal circumstances because you don't eat normally directly out of the tuna can. So usually just open it quickly and then just transfer the tuna to another container, whereas a lot of people drink out of the soda cans.
Right.
I think, by the way, all of the reasons of leniency I told you, so Rav Shechter doesn't accept them. Shechter is known as being a big machmer on Tvilas Kalim, for whatever reason.
Except he holds that because they're made by corporations.
That's everything. But Batsim, he's a big machmer on for that. Okay, so he has one big kula, but in terms of what needs tefillah is not considered a kli or something like that, so he's known to be a big machmer. So I believe that he will not drink directly out of a soda can for that reason. He'll always open it and pour the soda into a cup, and then even Snapple bottles, I think. That's even worse, because there, they're not creating a kli at all. It's already a kli and has a cap on it. So he won't even drink directly out of a Snapple bottle. He'll always pour it into a cup before drinking it,
I sort of understand. To me, it's an incredibly significant to say that it's not a vessel until you open it. It is a vessel. It was a vessel that somebody put the tuna fish or the soda into and then closed it. It was a vessel. You didn't make it into a vessel. It wasn't a vessel before. Of course it was a vessel before.
Well,
it's holding something.
A vessel means something that's usable. Yeah. So I'm saying when you make an opening, when you make an opening on something, that's what the Gemara refers to as creating a vessel.
Right.
Except the vessel was already created by somebody.
Post can bring your argument more by opening the bottle caps on Shabbos than by opening the
it's two different materials.
Wait a minute, it's two different
parts. Bottle cap is a different.
Right, but I'm saying part of the reason of the machmirim to open the bottle caps on Shabbos is because you're turning it from something that's just sitting there to something that's now usable to close and open as you wish to seal the bottle. So Rav Avadia says, no, what do you mean? There's a part of it that's holding it. There's like that ring that's holding it to the bottle, but Be'etzim, it's still a vessel when they attach it at the factory. Right. Some people say only by plastic, because there that's the two parts, and they weld it together or something, and then it is sort of a vessel like when they attach it, and then by the metal one, so it's worse, because it's just a flat piece of metal, and then they crunch it onto the bottle cap, and really you're making the clay, whatever it is. So that they're more makelam for that reason that you mentioned, but for opening a can, so there really is no opening whatsoever. It's completely welded together. It's there's no recognizable opening to use it as a vessel until you open it at all. Yeah.
There's a historical between the Chazon Ish and Rav Moshe Feinstein regarding, say, sardine cans. Rav Moshe said that it's like a peel, as it were, something which is around the. There's nothing intrinsically valuable about the sardine can. Something which just keeps the sardines from spoiling.
Yeah.
And so you open it up. If you open it on Shabbos, whatever might be the issue with Beit Kiv, it's not important. But in Bnei Brak, the Chazon Ish thought, of course, you never throw away a sardine can because obviously they were much less wealthy in Bnei Brak than in Brooklyn, and so they
Interesting. What would you reuse a sardine can for?
Oh, you put it use it to put nuts and bolts in or something. Whatever. So they apparently did not throw away sardine cans. That was the
interesting.
They're used for paling.
Very interesting. Okay. So anyway, but the normal practice is that we're not machmer for this Rav Shechter that we do drink from. We assume that it's secondary to the contents of the bottle, plus with a can, as you have the also svar that you're making the kli. So the normal practice is to be lenient on that, as well as certainly if you're not using it for multiple times, to be lenient not to tovel the aluminum the aluminum, disposable aluminum pans, but again, those who never total disposable aluminum pans certainly have on what to rely. Fine. The tumas masa mur bechol makom. What's tumas masa? Who she saw them a tumah of bishul nagabav fil hayabein alvena kamakin alvin nisah nitzma. Okay, right. Vechad anose osa biyado bechol davar shebegufo hareza bichlal nose v'tomei. So even if you don't carry it on your shoulders or in a normal carrying position, even if you just lift it with some other body parts, it's still considered tumas masa. Umesid bichlal nose hu gamke. And the same thing too. If you just nudge it. What does it mean, the shaking? Let's say you're walking by a long board, and on the other side of the board, there's a piece of corpse on it. You just move it, even though you're not actually lifting up the korah, that's also considered, you did it from your strength, you moved the tumah. You're really far away. It could be a 100-foot pole. That's when we always talk about tumas hesed. This is what we mean. This is what we were saying before. So the tuma of a hidden place. Midinose. So we're saying before that if somehow the dead body only touches you in an internal organ, internal part of your body, so you would not be tummy because of touching, but you would be tummy in this case due to masa. Since it's subject to tumas masa over here, there are tumas which are not subject to tumas masa, so you'd be off scot-free. But since here you're subject to tumas masa, so you would still be tummy, even though the object is only in your stomach, or inside another internal part. Even though it's not considered maga, it's not considered touching, it's still considered carrying when it's deep inside. So only a human being can become tame due to masa, due to carrying, and not a kli. So if a somehow you have, let me think of an example, you have a rolling thing, some type of kli that rolls, and rolling down the hill, and it touches this beam, and then it moves the beam or carries the beam, so it would not be metame the kli. A kli can only become tame from ohel, from being under the same roof, or from actually touching the corpse. It cannot become tame due to masa. The tumas ohel eina zulasi betumas made bilvad v'lo b'shar hatumos. So the tuma of a dead body is the only type of tuma that conveys tuma through ohel, which means either it's under the same roof as you or it are a roof to the other, meaning over or under. That's why it's not specifically a roof like a building. That's why someone mentioned last time that there's a problem that you have cemeteries. And you can have a tree that's growing on the edge of the cemetery, and it could be partially over the cemetery and partially over a road that's going next to the cemetery. So if you're going, let's say, driving along walking along the road and looks up, and all of a sudden there's a tree and there's a cemetery right there, so that could be a problem. The Cohen would have to leave as fast as possible, have to run out. That's a ras. Afabisha metama bevia eina metama beohel. So you might tell me, what do you mean? Saras also has the same type of tumah, but the tumah of saras is very different. It's not that as soon as you stick your hand in the room with a saras in it, then it is metama your hand instantaneously, the way it would be with a dead body. It's if you go into the house where the saras is and you stay for a certain amount of time, that is considered tuma metame bevia, if you come into the house. If you don't, not considered to have really entered the house, so it's not metame you. So there's an intrinsic difference between tsaras and a mace, that the mace is much more stringent, that it's metame be'ohel, and not just bevia. The mace metame be'ohel bein adam bein kelim o'ochlin u'mashkin. So whether it's any type of thing that can be mekabel tuma can be metame in the ohel. It had either a person or a vessel or a food or beverage. The echad ha'adam shenichnas kulo la'ohel ha'meis, o afilu miktsas, so even if just part of you goes into the dead body's tent, gion shichnis sham yado, o roshe, it's bo'sav, o chotmo, if you just stick in your nose, Harezeh nitma kulo. It's your whole body. Obviously, there's no such thing as just your nose becoming tummy. It's either all or nothing. So if you just take in your nose, so that's metame, your entire body. V'hanefalim afal pi shalonis kashuei varehen metamin. A aborted fetus is metame the same way as a dead body. Again, but it has to be past 40 days since conception. That in Judaism, a fetus that's younger than 40 days is not considered anything. It's considered maya balma, just water, and is not considered to be a person. But even though it couldn't have lived on its own at all outside the womb, any fetus that's older than 40 days past conception is subject absolutely to tuma, even bohel, the same way as any other dead body.
I forget. Is it recognizable as a person at 40 days?
No, it says even though it's not, the body parts are not clearly
right.
formed.
Okay. So you might not even, I was thinking about, miscarriages where you don't even know what happened which I think is what that would be.
After 40 days, there wouldn't be something coming out that you would realize was not a normal period? Right, so and also we have to remember that 40 days is not what we call now 40 days pregnant. Now we call now 40 days pregnant is not really a 40-day-old fetus because we calculate, the convention nowadays is to calculate pregnancy length from the date of the last menstrual period. Right, because it's hard to determine the exact date of conception. So
how would anybody know? I mean, obviously, now, okay, I thought it was actually something which they could figure out. Oh, okay. When they were talking about, in other words, the date of the only thing they even know now is the last menstrual period?
Because you can't pinpoint the exact time of conception.
Sometimes
maybe,
I guess now that I think about
it.
Right?
Sometimes you could tell.
I think it's very imprecise. Anyway, I'm just saying, whether you can or determine it or not, the convention nowadays is when you say a woman is X weeks pregnant, it means since the beginning of the last menstrual period. It doesn't mean since conception. Because it's much easier to give a precise time for that, I guess, when you have your first...
Since the
beginning, the date of your last menstrual period, when it began.
The beginning?
Yeah.
Which would mark the absolute, earliest time that possibly there could have been conception.
But once you've had...
Right.
I mean, but okay.
I mean, but obviously it doesn't really happen. Anyway, if I'm saying is, if Chas v'Shalom, a woman, this happens to women nowadays, so then if a woman, the doctor said, you're 40 days pregnant, which would be extremely, extremely early, that would not be halachically 40 days pregnant. So that's the only point that I'm trying to make now. The chazayis basar min ameis the eiver echad shalim shenechtach min ha'adam afavi she'ein bo chazayis basar. And if you have a olive's bulk of flesh or an entire part of body part, entire limb that was cut off, even if it doesn't have a chazayis of flesh on it, kol elu metamin b'mago v'masol. That's considered like a regular dead body, even though it's a part of it. The Avar Nikra Kolechad Miramach Evarim Shiv Adam, any one of the 248 Evarim, Shibcholechamim Yesh Basar Vigidin Vatsamos. Each one of them has flesh and sinews and bone. The Ain Hashinayim in Haminyan. This doesn't, teeth do not count as one of these 248. Atzmos Hameis, what about just bones? Alpha Bishain Aleham Basar, what if and there's no flesh on it? If it's clear that this is a human skeleton, then it's metame even bohel. These are the bones that individually are metame even bohel. I mean, not individually, but are metame even is less than perhaps recognizable as from a human body. Hashidrav Hagulgolas Verov Binyano Shaguf Verov Minyano. The spine and the skull. And most of the construction, literally, of the body, and most of the numerically of the bones. Kloma rov minyan ha'atzamos, whether it's numerically most of the bones, even if it's not recognizable as a human skeleton. Veshidra v'gulgola she'amru davka k'shehen shlemos. When it says the spine and the skull, it means when they're whole. Aval chasra shidra afilu chulya achas, even if there's one vertebra missing from the spine. V'gulgolas kesela, and if there's like this big, approximately, whatever, the size of a coin missing from the skull, so then it would not be metame be'ohel. Ein metame be'ohel, u'shtei shokav shel adam, b'yerech achas zehu ro binyano. And both the calves and one thigh is considered, that's technically the name of the muscle, not the name of the bone, but colloquially, Ve'ezehu rov binyano. That's most of the structure of a person. Chaser kolshu eino metame bohel. If anything is missing, so it's not metame bohel. The rov minyano hu kufchef hey atzamos min ramach evarim sheyesh ba'adam. So it's if you have 125 bones present from the 248 different body parts, the way Chazal counted them, then it would be metame bohel. Ushar atzamos shein ben rov binyan rov minyan, any of the other bones, im yesh ben rov vakav atzamos metame mefila bohel, if you have the amount, they're all gathered together in a bucket or something, and it has the, you have the volume of a quarter of a kav, then it's metame mefila bohel, even bohel, v'im lav ein metamin bohel. And if it's not that amount, then it's not metame bohel. The tumah sameis hi shivas yomim, the tumah lasts for 7 days, which is a tumah dika thing. It's not really, it has nothing to do with the Kohen nowadays. Even though the Tumah lasts for 7 days, the Kohen is Muzar every moment, not to be Metame himself. So he has to, again, if he finds himself accidentally in a place where he's subject to the Tumah of a corpse, then he has to run out immediately. He's not allowed to stay in there, even though it's not going to make him any less Tumah, because he's still going to be Tumah for 7 days, and he's may already be Tomei Meis because he did it accidentally years ago and he hasn't been able to purify with a paradum. You still have to run out as fast as possible. There's a scenario where it's brought down in the poskim. So what happens if the Kohen is sleeping and in a house and another member of that household all of a sudden, unfortunately, passes away in the middle of the night? So what are you supposed to do? So remember you have to tell the Kohen what's going on. But we have a little bit of a problem because everybody knows that in the olden days, the classical Jewish way, I don't know why I don't see about Pashkevilim about this in Mei Sharim, that people have dared change the Jewish practice about this, but the classical way that everybody did it was that you slept with no clothing. All you had was the bed sheets, and there's no such thing as pajamas. People slept completely naked. So if you go to the, what happens if somebody goes now into this Cohen's room and whispers in his ear, somebody just died upstairs. You have to get out. So we have a bit of a problem. So that's why you're not supposed to tell the Cohen. You're just supposed to go to the Cohen and say, "Excuse me, Mr. Cohen, wake up. Please get out of the house as fast as possible." So the Cohen in his groggy state is not really going to know what's going on. He's going to be able to get dressed and leave the house in a more presentable fashion. But you have a situation where if people forgot this halacha of how you're supposed to inform the Kohen, and you go into the Kohen's bedroom and say, "Dead body, get out!" So the Kohen has no choice. He's not allowed to get dressed at all. I mean, I suppose if it wouldn't delay you at all and you could grab a sheet or something on your way out, again, if it wouldn't delay you, then or your bathrobe is hanging on the door and you could rush out at top speed and just grab it along the way, then I guess you could. But if somehow that's not possible, then the din is that the Kohen has to leave the house as fast as possible, even under such circumstances. And once he's outside, so he has to call for help, and somebody will hopefully be nice enough to send some clothing.
It's a close relative that he would be allowed to.
No, and then he's allowed.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Because if it's in a house that he's in,
maybe he's a guest at someone else's house. True. I don't know. Yeah.
Isn't there some? Again, question of whether modesty ever was to consideration. Isn't there also something comparable to this where if you are wearing a bag of tzitzis and one of them gets puzzled on Shabbos?
Oh.
And we talk about it.
Correct.
And that, basically you've got to, take it off of you, even if there's
There are a few situations like this. So you have, it depends whether it's a Dorais or the Rabbanan. If you're walking in the street on Shabbos and you see that one of your tzitzis is puzzle, then that's a chiyuv chatas. The Gemara says that if you go outside on Shabbos with a garment with tzitzis on it, that is not correctly affixed, or that it is not full tzitzis, that are completely kosher, then you're chayiv chatos, because it's hotzah on the tzitzis, because the tzitzis are important. In other words, when you have a garment and you want to wear it on Shabbos, if there's something attached to it that has no independent chashivus, then you're allowed to go out wearing that garment. So, for example, most poskim are mekel, if you have a dry cleaning tag attached to the garment, so you don't want it there. It's nothing. You're just going to take it off and throw it in the garbage. So that's not an important lechatchila. You should take it off before Shabbos, obviously. But if you forgot, so then you're allowed to go out on Shabbos with this because it has no independent. Or if you have
extra buttons on,
the buttons on the shirt
is worse.
The buttons on the sleeve.
No, buttons
on the sleeve are that you want them there. That's part of the decoration of the garment.
The extra buttons on the right. I cut them all off.
Actually, I mean,
these are part of the garment. This is no question. We're talking about what he's referring to is
anyway. What you'd have is on the placket of the shirt, the part that down. Right. You have extra buttons which they sold instead of giving them a little packet.
Right,
they sold the extra buttons on. So if you lose a button, then you can move it over to the right place. My white shirt is all off.
So that's worse. That's what I'm saying. That's something that might have chashivas. That's why if you have extra buttons, the spare buttons that are sewn onto a shirt or sometimes other garments, so then it depends. Most poskim, there are three different shitas about that. One shita is that it's always usur. There's one shita that says it depends. If you're the type of person that uses them and is going to think, I break buttons occasionally, and I like to have these here for safekeeping. I'm going to move them to a different place in the garment if a button actually breaks. I like to have them there. That's good. So then you're not allowed to do that. But if you're the type of person that pays no mind to them, if you break a button on a shirt, maybe you're going to throw it out. Maybe you hardly ever break a button on a shirt. You don't even pay any attention at all to the extra buttons. Then it's allowed to go out because they're not considered to have chashivos. And there's one shita is that it's always mutter to go out with extra buns on Shabbos because even if you're planning to use them, since they're commonly sewn on the garment, the Rav Shlomo Zalman had this far. Since they're commonly sewn on the garment, then they're considered a part of the way garments look. So then you're always allowed to wear them on Shabbos. And the conclusion of most poskim is like the middle shita, that it depends if you're planning to use them and you want them or not, so whether you're allowed to wear them on Shabbos. So when I was a bacher, I used to be mekel on this, but then when I got married, so I commented to my wife at a certain point, or maybe right before I got married, I remember what, at a certain point in the marriage process. So I said to my wife, there is this chumra, maybe I should be more machmer on it, I don't know, I've been mekel on it, maybe I should cut off the buttons from my shirts for Shabbos. So she said, and what will you do with them afterwards? I said, well, throw them out, of course. She said, you would throw out a button from a shirt? We always keep all the buttons just in case, because we're going to use them. So I said,
yeah, me too.
Well, I guess now I have to be machmer on it, I have no choice, because now they have chashivas.
Well, to her,
but we're one, so they have chashivas to her, they have chashivas to me. So, but in any event, so most postgame are makel if you pay them no mind, but are machmer if you don't, if you care that they're there and you would plan to certainly use it if one would break off. So that's worse. That's an example of something that has chashivas. But the tzitzis is the same thing. So if the tzitzis of the garment, if they're, tzitzis are chashiv. You will like the strings. You can use this. You can take the strings off and use them for something else. They're specially made. They're for tzitzis. You could take them off this garment and put them on something else. So if you take the tzitzis, so that's why if the tzitzis is completely made, so then they serve a halachic function for this garment. They are part of the garment because they are the tzitzis that serve this garment now. That's why, according to some Rishonim, there's a whole machlokes. The Rambam is very. He writes very strongly about this. He says there's some poskim, he's quoting the Rif. He says there's some poskim who say they're not allowed to wear a garment with tzitzis at night on Shabbos, because you see that you're only allowed to wear the tzitzis when they serve a halachic function. So since you're patur from tzitzis at night, you're not allowed to wear tzitzis.
It's inside your house.
Oh, you walk outside. Or a talis kadin, or some people wear a talis gadol Friday night. The Teimanim have a minag, I'm sure you know, that they wear a talis gadol for Friday night services. Because it's an honor of Shabbos. When Shabbos first comes in, they put on a special garment in honor of Shabbos. Yom Kippur, yeah, but then you're inside. But you don't. The Teimanim wear them on the street. They wear them the whole night.
Yeah.
Some of the Yerushalmis also do that. So the tzitzis, the Rambam says that's ridiculous. Even though they are part of the garment by virtue of their halachic function. If they're well formed, then they're kosher tzitzis. So they're subordinate to the garment at all times. You're allowed to wear it tzitzis at night, no problem whatsoever. And indeed, this is certainly the practice. This is the way the Achronim Paskin, like the Rambam, that you are allowed to wear tzitzis at night on Shabbos. But whatever it is, the Gemara does say explicitly that if the tzitzis are not kosher, then you're chayev chatos. It's a deraisa if you walk outside with the talis or the talis cotton on Shabbos. They didn't have talisos ktanos in those days. They just had a talis gadol. There's the cloaks with tzitzis, whatever it is. So you're not.
Because you're carrying.
Right, because the tzitzis are not serving their proper function for this garment, and they're chashuv. The strings are chashuv because they have an independent identity, and you want to keep them for other purposes. So there's also an interesting machlokas that Rashi says that the reason that they're chashuv is because of the tchelis. That since tchelis is so expensive, it's not the strings themselves, the white strings. Those you maybe aren't so chashuv, but the tchelis is what's chashuv. So according to Rashi, if all you have is lavan, all you have is white strings on your tzitzis, so maybe if one's pasul, you're allowed to go. You're allowed to go outside on Shabbos. That's not how we pass. We pass in that you're never allowed to go outside on Shabbos if you have the non-kosher tzitzis on your garments. That's the reason. So if you're walking along, so it's a deraisa. You're walking along on Shabbos. And you find yourself in a Rishus HaRabim, a place where you're not allowed to carry on a Doraisa level, and you happen to glance down at your tzitzis, and you see that they're puzzles, so you have to take off your cloak right away. It's a Doraisa, you have no choice. But if you found that you're wearing a garment somehow that's only an Issa D'Rabbanan to be wearing it on Shabbos, then you would be allowed to. And if you took it off, you'd be completely naked. Again, if they're not talking about
So
if you have your jacket and you find that something attached to your jacket, but you still have your shirt underneath, okay, it won't be Shabbistic. Might be a little embarrassed, but you're not going to be. So far, you're not going to be degraded. Mm-hmm. So you would have to take it out right away. But if it would be something that if you take it off, if you're only wearing one garment, it's hard to imagine what that would be exactly.
Why would anybody? I mean, wouldn't people be afraid to wear tzitzis on Shabbos?
You check them before. Uh-huh. I mean, the Maharam, that's the famous shita. There are people who don't wear tzitzis on Shabbos. The Maharam was known as the quote unquote brisker of the Rishonim. I've heard him referred to. He was the one who always tried to beyotze all the shitas of his predecessors. So he was very machmir. So they said the Maharam did not wear tzitzis on Shabbos because he didn't want to check them on Shabbos because when you check your tzitzis and you find something wrong, so automatically you're going to start tying it.
Right.
So he didn't want to check his tzitzis on Shabbos for fear that he would tie it. So therefore, he didn't wear tzitzis at all on Shabbos because he was afraid that they might have become pasul accidentally, and he would be chayav chata. So he only wore tzitzis inside, or talis, I guess, in shul, but he didn't wear tzitzis inside. There's also, briskers are famously don't wear tzitzis on Shabbos because of this. It's hard to imagine they take it seriously, but apparently Reb Chaim had a diuk in the Rambam the Rambam says that a tzitzis hagimura, that full tzitzis is not a problem to wear on Shabbos. So apparently Reb Chaim had a diuk that the Rambam meant to say that if you don't have tcheles, then you're not allowed to wear the tzitzis on Shabbos. That's obviously not what the Rambam really meant. He just meant kosher tzitzis versus pasul tzitzis. He didn't mean that. But there is the shita, of course, of the Baal Hamor, that the Baal Hamor says that if you don't have tcheles, you might as well not wear tzitzis. He paskins like Rebbe, the sheet of Rebbe in the Mishnah, that tcheles ma'akev es halavan, that if you don't have tcheles, you shouldn't wear, no need to wear tzitzis at all. So if you then, some say, I think maybe even some say the Maharam didn't wear tzitzis for this reason, because he felt that at least regarding Shabbos, we should be choshish for the Baal Hamor, and if you don't have tcheles, then you're not allowed to wear tzitzis on Shabbos because it's not really mitzvah yetzes kihil chasa.
Outside on Shabbos.
Right. Again, which according, it's interesting because that's, according to the Baal Hamor, that's true, but according to Rashi, it's worse if you wear the tcheles because according to Rashi, the whole problem if it's puzzle is if the tcheles is puzzle, not if the lavan is puzzle, but whatever it is. So there's another reason also not to wear, so those are the reasons some people don't wear tzitzis at all outside on Shabbos. Don't wear a talis on Shabbos. Some people don't wear a talis cotton for other reasons. So a talis cotton is, first of all, it's a suffix whether it's chayav in tzitzis at all. That's why people who marry, people who either wear a talis gadol before they're married or married people, only make the bracha on the talis gadol in the morning, and they exempt the talis katan, because if you have the opportunity to have a talis gadol, which is for certainly chayav in tzitzis, so a talis katan, which is only really a doubt whether it's chayav in tzitzis, because it's not what's called derech ituf. That since the bracha is lishat lehis atef betzitzis, to enwrap oneself in tzitzis, so according to some rishonim, the only type of garment that's chayiv in tzitzis is a garment with which you enwrap yourself, not that's just worn as an undergarment. So that's why there's a whole history about a talis katan. But
so where did this bracha come from then?
What, on mitzvah tzitzis?
Yeah.
It was basically...
It could have been from Chazal, actually.
Right, it was basically made up to accommodate the talis katan.
I thought you can't make up brachas.
Yeah, really, that's why some... So that's why... This, what?
What date would this have been, are we talking about?
Middle Ages. I remember the first person who introduced, who mentions
the
bracha. Right. But some people say the Vilna Gaon holds... Not like that. The Vilna Gaon holds that the bracha is always lisatif betzitzis, but because that's the way the Chazal mentioned the bracha, because that's the way people wore tzitzis, the lisatif betzitzis. They enwrap themselves. But he holds that a talis katan is chayav, but you still make the bracha lisatif betzitzis on a talis katan.
Actually, I've seen. I remember sitting here. So guys would go ahead and they would put on the dress cut and they'd actually wrap it around.
Right, so some people feel, so some of the Achronim on the commentaries on Shulchan Aruch quote this, that if you're making the bracha on a talis katan, then you could make elisate betzitzis and get out of the nusach habracha issue if you enwrap yourself with a talis katan. But it's possible that that doesn't even help, because the garment is not a garment that's designed to be worn in a wrapping fashion. So anyway, so the talis katan, so some say that you don't wear a talis katan on Shabbos because it's sort of like an extra garment. It's not, again, it's hard to say but if it's not really chayiv and tzitzis, so maybe the tzitzis are unnecessary, so the tzitzis would be hotza. But that's somewhat difficult, because when you say that a garment is not properly attached, tzitzis are not properly attached to a garment, what it means is there's something wrong with a tzitzis. Mm-hmm. If you have a garment where it has full tzitzis on it, and you wear it like that every day, and you have no intention of fixing it or changing the tzitzis around, then it's hard to say that that's hotza. That's why there's the famous machlokes between the Mishnah Berurah and the Netziv. Everybody quotes this. The Netziv wrote a letter to the Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah paskins that if you have a talis katan that's maybe smaller than the correct shear for a talis katan, the minimum size, so then or maybe there's something that's only chayiv and tzitzis as a chumrah, but maker, then it's not chayiv and tzitzis, so the Mishnah Berurah says you should not wear that on Shabbos, because maybe the tzitzis are extra, they're not necessary for this garment. So then the Netziv says, no, that's not what it means. It does. If you have a talis katan that's smaller than the correct shear, but you wear it like that every day anyway, and the tzitzis are there, and the tzitzis are whole, and you're not, you want to leave the tzitzis there forever, so the tzitzis are considered subordinate to the garment. So the Pashtus is really like the Netziv, that if you wear it like that all the time as a garment, it's hard to imagine that that's hotza. But in any event, that's the reason. So we have some people don't wear tzitzis at all outside on Shabbos for various reasons, and there are some people that don't wear a talis katan outside on Shabbos. You know, the talis katan potentially has more issues than a talis gadol. But again, the minhag, the common custom, is certainly to be mekel to wear tzitzis full tzitzis, proper tzitzis outside on Shabbos, properly made tzitzis. On Shabbos, in any case, at night, and all these times, we're certainly mekel on it, but is proper, if possible, why not? Bechoshesh, for at least for the Mishnah Berurah, that you don't go out with a talis katan that has smaller than a shear. Again, even though probably, again, it sounds like Netziv is more correct, but you shouldn't go out with a talis katan that's less than a shear anyway. So you might as well bechoshesh. Yeah, sorry.
Slightly related.
Yeah.
If you have a really nice set of tzitzis, like with tchelas and all,
yeah,
that, and for some reason the talis gets worn out or whatever, and you want to move them from one, you say, oh, well,
yeah,
I'm going to get rid of the talis because it's finished, but the tzitzis I want to save.
Yeah.
Am I correct in saying if you want to put them on another talis, you have to untie them and then tie them onto it?
Yeah.
You can't just cut off the corner and be cute.
Yeah, that would be much easier. I agree with you, but you can't do that.
But you have to.
The asu lahem tzitzis, that the children of Israel shall make for themselves tzitzis. You have to make it. Tasev elomin asu. You can't just, yeah.
Nice little.
It would be much easier your way, but unfortunately, that's not the case. So the another instance which I thought you were referring to as well, which is if there's kilayim, if you're wearing shatnez, and if you see someone else walking in the in the street, and there's shatnez derabanan, the rabbinical shatnez, so you don't have to tell them, and you wait till they're in a private area so they can strip off the shatnez in a private area. But if there's shatnez deraisa, if you see someone wearing shatnez deraisa in the street, even if that's their only garment that you're wearing, you go and rip it off right away.
How would you know?
Again, more normally, especially nowadays, who knows except the people with the microscopes in the shatnez lab.
Yeah.
But anyway, but that's another example of of having to go outside naked because of halachic reasons, but hopefully none of these come up too much. This applies to male kohanim, b'chol makom b'chol zman, avalo b'nei kevos, not female priestesses. Shekein bo ha-perush, emoral ha-kohanim b'nei Aaron, the priests, sons of Aaron, l'nefesh lo yitama, should not become defiled through a dead body, b'nei Aaron davka v'lo b'nos Aaron, not the daughters of Aaron. B'koin over alzeh v'nitma l'shum meis, chutz mechamisha mesei mitzvah b'meizid loke. You see, the Kohen receive lashes if he violates this, and he becomes defiled from any dead body except for the five that he's allowed to become defiled for, which is what we're going to talk about in the next mitzvah. This mitzvah is creates a lot of issues nowadays in terms of kohanim going into hospitals. Sometimes in Israel they have the morgue, you know, separate in a separate structure from the hospital. It creates a lot of problems, but kohanim have to be careful that they do not violate this mitzvah.
The nursing home, they put out a sign.
For kohanim. But a kohen's not allowed to go into, again, I don't think most people in a nursing home are not at the state most of the time, hopefully, but a kohen is not allowed to enter a house that contains a goses, which is someone on the verge of death. That's also something to keep in mind, yeah?
No, I think we did discuss whether or not the corpse of a tzaddik is... Now, did we test whether it's a non-Jewish corpse?
Oh, yeah, I forgot to mention that. It's very important. Thank you for reminding me. So there is machlokes rishonim. Ah, thank you. There is a machlokes rishonim about whether this whole mitzvah applies to non-Jewish bodies as well. It's based on a machlokes in the Gemara, which sheet do we paskin like? So most rishonim paskin that a non-Jewish corpse is metame through bimago v'masa, if you touch it and if you carry it, but it's not metame v'ohel. Because it says in the Parsha, when it talks about Tumas Ohel, Odom ki amus b'ohel, a person who dies in a tent. So a person par excellence, such as ink singles it out over there. Non-Jews are also people. But Jews, a person par excellence is a Jew, so it only is a Jewish corpse as Matan. Oh, that's the most Rishon in Paskin. But we're generally Choshesh for the minority Shita that Paskin's like the other opinion in the Gemara, that non-Jews are also Matame b'ohel. So it's not proper for a Kohen to go into a house that contains a non-Jewish corpse as well. The Minchas Chinuch actually brings an interesting shita. I think he says it's the Yerayim. That the Yerayim, who was a student of Rabbeinu Tam, paskins that Goyim are not Metame at all, even for touching and carrying. But he says that this, a simple understanding of the Yerayim is it doesn't mean that they're literally not Metame. It means that Kohanim are not Muzhar about it nowadays. But in times of the Beis HaMikdash, if you touched a non-Jewish corpse or carried a non-Jewish corpse, you certainly would become Tamei vis-a-vis the Beis HaMikdash. It's just that Kohanim is not a problem now. We don't pass like that at all. certainly a Kohen is absolutely not allowed to touch a non-Jewish corpse or carry it, but the question is Metame Bo'olet, which is a question about which we are generally Machmer.